Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Tuesday is Golden Oldie Day here at Offbeat Oregon, which means I'll be reading from one of my very first columns written back in 2009. Thank you again for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. During World War II, people on the West Coast had the certain feeling that they were on the front lines of the home front. This made sense. After all, the Nazis had to go through Britain's Royal Navy to get to the eastern seaboard across the Atlantic to pester people over there. But on the other side of the world, across the Pacific Ocean from the Oregon coast, loomed one of the most powerful naval nations in the world, with aircraft carriers well-stocked with what was, frankly, the best carrier-based fighter built before 1943. War buffs, you can argue that point with me if you want to, but I think I could defend my position. I'm talking, of course, about Japan. To make things worse, after the Japanese invaded the Aleutian Islands in Alaska in 1942, they actually had a place from which they could launch land-based strikes against the lower 48. To meet this threat, the Army, then in control of the nation's main air forces, had a cadre of civilian volunteers whose job it was to watch for incoming aircraft. That group was known as the Aircraft Warning Service. Well, the AWS was mainly staffed with people who couldn't be sent to fight. Women, younger teens, men above prime fighting age. It was run by a branch of government called Civilian Defense, which worked with the Army in a supporting role, kind of like a fire department's auxiliary does. The West Coast had about 150,000 eyes watching the sky for Japanese marauders. Not all at the same time, of course. And in fact, some of those eyes did behold a Japanese marauder. The only enemy wartime airstrikes on the U.S. territory occurred during the early morning of September 9, 1942, when a tiny seaplane that had been sneaked across the ocean in a special compartment on a Japanese submarine dropped two tiny bombs near Brookings, hoping to start a forest fire. The plane tried again on September 29, dropping another pair of 170-pounders near Cape Blanco. Both times it was spotted and reported by the AWS. And any resulting fires were put out without incident. The massive Japanese attacks never came. Presently, the U.S. took the Aleutians back. But the AWS really proved its worth in another way. Local historian Bill McCash estimates the spotters saved the lives of at least 100 American aviators, likely more. Remember, this was an age when navigation instruments were crude. Planes would fairly regularly get lost in the fog, especially along Oregon's notoriously misty south and central coast, and lumber along blindly until they ran out of fuel, which they usually did over some inhospitable piece of old-growth forest or open sea. With 150,000 eager pairs of eyes and ears on the ground, many of those planes were spotted and reported. Knowing their positions, the Army could radio the pilots and tell them where to go to either get out of the fog or find an airport. In one highly dramatic case, an AWS spotter saw a bomber ditching in the open sea off Seaside. The Navy quickly got on the scene and managed, despite a storm that was raging at the time, to rescue a crew member. Another crew member swam to shore, the rest of them unfortunately drowned before the amphibious rescue plane got there. The AWS is one of McCash's great historical interests, and he is very interested in building a historical record of this vital but often overlooked piece of Oregon's war effort. So if you or someone you know was involved in the AWS during the big one, drop me a line at 541-357-2222 or finn@offbeatoregon.com, and I'll put you right in touch with him. This article was first published on September 3rd of 2009, under the headline, Aircraft Warning System Spotted Few Enemies But Saved Many Friends. Key sources included works by Bill McCash and the Coos County Historical Society. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our anchor page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatorgan.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do? Email me at fan@offbeatorgan.com. Also, let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead. Our next show is going to be coming your way around 6 a.m. Wednesday morning. And until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.